A few months into the pandemic, therapists and doctors started noticing a strange trend. They were getting all these calls from patients wanting to fundamentally alter their appearance. People would call up just absolutely suffering, just racked with insecurities, convinced that they looked worse than usual, and that there was something terribly wrong about them that had to be changed right away. They would say things like, you know, I hate my eyes. Or they would say, why is my nose so off-center? Is there anything I can do to change my ears, my skin, my smile? Calls asking about plastic surgery just went through the roof. The doctors had never seen so many, and they asked themselves what could be going on. They noticed one commonality about the complaints. They were almost always about facial features. They took a look at the calendar, and sure enough, they put two and two together. The trend perfectly coincided with the time when Zoom became a big part of our lives. This spike happened exactly when we started spending our days video conferencing and looking at our face on the screen for hours at a time. And this phenomenon actually has a name now. That's how common it is. It's called Zoom dysmorphia. Having a poor self-image based on the version of yourself that you see on video calls. An exaggerated sense of all your imperfections. Our Zoom self is a distorted picture, by the way. That image of us that appears in the little box when we're on a conference call, it's filtered through a camera lens, it's at a strange angle, so it distorts, it shrinks certain features and it magnifies others. This isn't a true picture of ourselves that we're looking at. We feel that we are hopelessly flawed. But the problem isn't us, it's our perception. We haven't been seeing ourselves accurately. So Zoom may have worsened this problem, but of course it's not a new problem. It's not a creation of the pandemic. Most of us struggle all our lives with some feeling that we're not good, not beautiful, not lovable. On the outside, or maybe even on the inside, when we look at ourselves, that's what we tend to do, is exaggerate all the imperfections. And meanwhile, we gloss right over all the good qualities. I read an interview in the newspaper the other day, you might have seen it. A doctor was talking about a patient of his, a man that he had tried to talk to about getting the COVID vaccine. And the doctor had patiently answered all of the man's questions. He had given him all sorts of information from different resources. He had tried everything he could think of to convince this man that the vaccine was safe and effective, and it seemed like that was getting through okay. But in the end, the man just wouldn't get the shot. You know what his reason was? He couldn't believe that humans would give something that good away for free. It just didn't compute to him that they could actually have a life-saving remedy and give this away without charging people. He thought there had to be some ulterior motive, there had to be a catch. So he walked away without getting vaccinated. He's walking around putting his life at risk, all because he couldn't believe that people are good. Which is so sad to have that view of human nature, but also understandable. There are days when that creeps in for me, that view, and I'm sure it does for a lot of us. It's easy to look at human beings through a negative lens and hone in on the bad, because it's definitely there. We all lapse into that from time to time. It's easy to do the same thing looking around at the world, to notice all the bad features, all that's going wrong. Last year, there was a terrific photo that went viral. It showed a sign hanging in a bookstore that said, "Please note, post-apocalyptic fiction has now been moved to our current affairs section." I thought about that today with this reading from Luke. This sounds pretty current to us. This could have been from the newspaper this morning. Roaring seas that are rising, nations in dismay, people frightened, not knowing what the world is coming to. People who are tempted to let their hearts become drowsy, that's what Luke says, by turning to drink, or for us, maybe drugs or food or Netflix or overwork to distract themselves. People who feel weighed down with the anxieties of daily life, that certainly sounds familiar. I've heard many of you folks joke from time to time that there are days when it feels like we're living in the end times. And really, I know you're only half joking. We can't ignore what's happening in the world. There are things that do need fixing, that do need to be fundamentally altered, that need to be changed. But this beautiful season of Advent reminds us that despite all this, the world's not a bad place. That is a distorted picture. We are not depraved, and creation is not fallen. And to show us that truth, God did something wonderful. God sent Jesus to raise us up, to lift up our heads, to be a kind of corrective lens, restoring our perception of ourselves and the world. Because if God came to dwell in this world as a human being in a human body, then that means that this earth and our bodies are hallowed ground. It means a human being is a holy place, a sacred dwelling. And we don't have to feel ashamed of frailties and imperfections, real or imagined, because even those have been touched by God. God understands them from the inside out. Advent means arrival or coming. Why did Jesus come into the world? One answer floating around out there is this: Jesus came because human beings were bad and the world was bad. It needed fixing because it was so messed up. Jesus came because he had to save us from sin. That's one answer. It might be the one that you grew up with if you were raised in a religious environment more conservative than this one. But it's not the only answer, not by a long shot. Another option, one that people like St. Francis and the mystics liked, and I like it too, is this: Jesus didn't come because he had to. Jesus came because he wanted to. What do you do when you love someone? You want to be close to them. You want to spend time with them, understand them, share their feelings and their experiences, both the good and the bad. And you want them to grow into the person that they are meant to be. You want them to see accurately how good they are and how beautiful. This is why God sent Jesus. It was about love. It was out of wanting to be close to us. God wanted to show us the world is holy, and so are we. Every year around this time, the monarch butterflies migrate to California to stay there through the winter. In the 80s and the 90s, over a million of them wintered there. Then more recently, because of pesticides and habitat destruction, that number dropped by 99%. Last year, fewer than 2,000 made that trip. And people feared the worst. They thought that maybe we had driven them right to the brink of extinction. This year, this month, in fact, something amazing happened. It's still happening. It's going on right now. The butterflies are returning, even as we speak. More than 100,000 have already been counted, and it's still early in their season. This is the highest number that has been seen in years. At night, the trees are full of butterflies, resting. They're more numerous than the leaves of the trees. And people are coming from all over the state, both to help conservationists count them for a preservation effort, but also just to see the site itself because it's so amazing. No one knows why the monarchs have come back. But one scientist said that for whatever reason, nature has given us a second chance. There's a healing power loose in this world that we will never fully understand. There's a grace that restores and repairs and forgives. It's much bigger than us, but we can be a part of it. In South America, as we know, of course, humans have been cutting down trees for centuries, eliminating forests to make consumer goods, including paper. A few years ago, a publishing house in Argentina produced a children's book made all from sustainable materials. Embedded in the paper of the pages are seed pods. When a child is done reading the book, he or she can take it outside and plant it in the ground. And over time, a tree grows, sprouting from the pages of the book as it composts and goes back to the ground. So the kids take part in the reforesting of their area, which really needs it. They play a role in restoring the earth. And as they do this, they're learning along the way that humans are not destroyers, they're healers. This book is teaching them that that's who we really are. They're also learning that the planet isn't doomed, right? It can come back to life, and we can be part of that. We can use our gifts to help, not to harm. Our mistakes don't define us. Goodness is our destiny. A while back, I was visiting my mother at her house, and I reached into the cupboard for a coffee cup. As I took it down, I dropped it, and the handle snapped off. And instantly, my mother said, "Oh, don't worry, that cup was 20 years old. It wasn't a keepsake of any kind. Just the cupboard's full of other cups. Just throw it out and get a new one." But I felt this guilt lingering. I kept scolding myself. I kept running this idea through my head, just saying to myself, how could I have been so careless? I magnified this small thing, this tiny thing, completely out of proportion. It wasn't rational. Guilt almost never is. I ended up bringing the mug home and tucking it away in my own cupboard. And I would drink out of it every morning. Even though without a handle, it burned my hands to hold it when it was full of coffee. And I didn't think of this at the time, but now looking back, I think this probably was a bit of a penance that I imposed on myself. Maybe unconsciously, I think I was atoning for my slip-up. Well, fast forward a few weeks, my mom came to visit me at my house. And you can probably guess what happened. She went to make herself a cup of tea, and on the way spotted the handleless cup in my cupboard. And she's a mom. So, of course, she was scandalized. She said, "Why do you have this still?" And trying to reassure her, I quickly said, "Well, don't worry, nobody drinks out of it but me." That did not make her feel any better. And she demanded, "But, Celie, why do you drink out of it? You have plenty of cups. I just bought you a beautiful new mug. You do not need to drink out of this decrepit, broken one. Why would you do that?" So I had to sit with that question for a while. I had to turn it over in my mind. I would absolutely never serve a guest or any other person out of a broken cup. Why was I drinking out of it each morning? And then I realized that there again was that inner voice that most of us have, saying from somewhere deep within, "This is all you deserve. You don't need anything better than this. Maybe others do, but not you. You don't count." So it's amazing all the ways, big and small ways, that this idea can just creep into our consciousness over time. I expect that I'm not alone in having something like this. You have your own equivalents, I bet, of the broken cup. How easy it is to convince ourselves that certain kinds of happiness are for other people, just not us. Could God really want us to be happy? We run away from that idea. We're sure there must be a catch. We think it's too good to be true. But it isn't. And all we have to do is look at Jesus to see that. Jesus is living proof that God doesn't hand us a broken world and say, "This is all you get. This is all you deserve." God doesn't ask us to begin every day with pain and discomfort and things falling apart. Instead, God gave us the greatest gift we could imagine, God's Son. God gave Jesus freely, with no catch, no ulterior motives, for no reason other than pure love. Because God's wish never was that we just survive and scrape by. God's wish has always been that we thrive and that we know true joy and hope and peace and rebirth and deep happiness. So this Advent, I think that is our spiritual work, to believe what God is showing us through Jesus. This is not a fallen world. Goodness is our destiny. Creation is holy, and so are we. Amen.